This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of September 28th, 2025. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 415. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And on the big deal feature, problem gambling is on the rise in British Columbia. Investigative journalist and contributor to TheBreaker.News, Stanley Tromp, joins me to reveal what BC Lottery Corporation knows. And Mario Canseco of Research Co. also joins me to summarize another wild week in British Columbia politics. The BC Greens chose a new young leader. The BC Conservatives decided to stand pat. Premier David Eby went to the Big Apple. And BC government workers stepped up their strike with picket lines around liquor stores and warehouses. This is the big deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. Stanley Tromp is a veteran Vancouver investigative journalist and one of Canada's top experts on freedom of information. And pardon the pun, Stanley, you hit the jackpot on freedom of information with BCLC.
Yes.
What did you get from BCLC?
Nearly 2,000 pages of reports of surveys of the freedom of information law over the past 2 years in regards to gambling addictions and other problems there, and how they appear to be rising over the past year by roughly 10 to 15% in responses to Ipsos research and Harris polls. One was with 500 respondents, another with 1,000 respondents. So they're fairly large. And in one of them, it says, quote, BC Lottery Corp needs to do more to address high-risk behaviors and beliefs for all players, as well as to encourage players to engage in safer behaviors. And it said over the last fiscal year, quote, significantly more players indicate their gambling has caused financial problems, that other people have criticized their betting, and that they've borrowed money or sold something to gamble, unquote. So 10-15% is not a massive rise, but it is really significant. And if the trend continues, who knows how high it could go in the next year.
Digging deeper into the reports that were from these market research surveys, what were the other key takeaways about gambling addiction? What is BCLC trying to do about the problem that you were able to find in these market research reports?
It's the endless conundrum, the internal conflict between governments wanting more revenue and yet also, on the other hand, not wanting to increase gambling addiction. And I don't know how that will ever be resolved, how to square that circle, but they keep looking for ways. And the numbers are especially serious for younger people in their late teens and early 20s. And they expend all across every form of gambling, like slot machines, casinos, and horse racing, and online gambling, and bingo games, etc. Meanwhile, lottery only players have dropped over the past year, but the number of Lotto 649 players increased. And also, an internal poll says that British Columbians have worries about where their gambling revenue goes and don't feel it makes a good impact on their community. Then there's another report by Deloitte from last June 2024. It says consumer spending on gambling in BC has recovered from the COVID pandemic losses, but gambling expenditures have fallen as a share of real disposable income since 2010. And yet, at the same time that happening, the rate of gambling addiction is rising. So it's quite interesting results.
Are there trouble points that you saw there within the market research? And are there areas where BCLC seems to be getting its message across and seems to be doing things responsibly?
Well, they have their program, these billboards say, Know Your Limit, Play Within It. We'll see those. And they're on their Lotto kiosks as well. So they're trying to get the point across. But I don't know how well it's going there. So there's Question was asked, have you bet more than you could really afford to lose for casino games? It rose by 11% over fiscal 24-25 up to fiscal 25-26 to date. So these numbers are quite recent. And with online gaming, that question rose by 14%. Have you bet more than you could really afford to lose? And they're roughly similar increases in response to these questions. Quote, have people criticized your betting and have you felt guilty about the way you gamble and has your gambling caused financial problems for your household? And have you borrowed money or sold anything to get money to gamble? And even in bingo hall games, that's been so, which you think is somewhat more benign than casinos. So there's work to be done to lower those numbers.
Yeah, it's also the busiest time of the year for sports, for CFL, NFL, soccer of all types, North American and around the world. The NHL and NBA seasons are on the horizon. Next year, the FIFA World Cup is coming to Vancouver, among other cities. What does BCLC's market research say about sports betting and sports bettors? I mean, sports betting has exploded since the federal government legalized single event wagering.
Yes, in these records, there's special categories for sports betting. And, for example, a player health tracker report by Ipsos in July 2024 says sports betting is a distinct concern. As his quote, given that online sports betting continues to be a higher risk group, BCLC could benefit from maintaining targeted initiatives that tackle specific challenges of sports betting and promote safer gambling practices, especially during major sporting events such as the Super Bowl, March Madness, and the NHL and NBA playoffs in the coming months, unquote. And so the behaviors and beliefs of online sports bettings are, they say, relatively stable, yet it continues to exhibit a more at-risk profile. So from last fiscal year to this, sports bettors' response to the statement, I was honest with my family or friends about the amount I spent, dropped by 5%, while question, I should be able to walk away from my gambling at any time, fell by 10%. And they were asked, sports bettors, do you feel you have a problem with gambling? And the number rose 8%. And they're also likely to believe in various myths, which the Lottery Corp admits are myths, such as, if I play longer, I'm more likely to win. That's up 6%. I almost won so that I am due for a win. It's up 10%. If I use special rituals, I can avoid bad luck. That's up 7%. So, well, most of us can see that those are myths, but some sports gamblers cannot. And also there's the other matter of other sports betting websites, which is quite interesting. A tracker survey of a year ago found that PlayNow sports bettors, that's BC Lottery's online gambling, are increasingly using other legal websites to place their bets, with a significant increase on those betting only on PlayNow quarter over quarter. Then a later report said PlayNow sports bettors are playing significantly less on illegal sports betting sites from the quarter. So BCLC PlayNow led with a recognition of 63%, and far, far behind fell Bet365 at 17%, DraftKings at 13%, and downward. So Angus Reid poll said PlayNow is by far the most recognized site, yes, for offering legal sports gaming, but there are other mentions of other popular illegal sites. So confusion persists. Also, ProLine is a niche game with only 3% of it playing suggested. Wider spread adoption will need to be accomplished through PlayNow. So that's a niche question there.
What does this all mean for British Columbians who gamble? And what does it mean for British Columbians who don't gamble? Legalized gambling through BCLC is in many ways a form of harm reduction. We hear about harm reduction a lot in other contexts, but what does the information that you receive from BCLC mean for those different groups?
Well, as some people say, the greatest gambling addict of all is government addicted to gambling revenues. So perhaps they can find other revenue streams than this, or to grow less dependent upon it. They also have working on gambling treatment conferences, and there's institutes such as UBC and other universities to study the problem, and advertising campaigns and raising awareness. And of course, the gambling addiction is not just an individual problem, but affects all the friends and the family of the gamblers. And especially, for example, if they would steal from their workplace to fund their problem, which has happened, cases on that. So it's a broader social issue than just the people involved. And the cost, of course, to taxpayers of treating these issues, and that sometimes the crime involved with it as well, should be factored in. BCLC spends only a minuscule portion. I once calculated less than 1% of their gross profits on treating gambling addiction. So maybe that could be raised as well, but I'll be asking them for more details. And I think the finance ministry should take an interest, because that's who BCLC reports to, actually.
You are one of Canada's top experts in freedom of information, of accessing public records. And on this story, how, and other stories related to BCLC, how is this Crown Corporation to deal with as a reporter compared to other parts of the BC government?
Yes, I must say it's rather pleasantly surprised. About 15 years ago, BCLC, their Freedom of Information branch, was the worst in BC, the most litigious and secretive. But now, it's working fairly well, perhaps under new management. They don't charge the $10 application fee. They responded in a month, and they withheld only a few pages under Section 17, which is called Economic Harm to Government. So it could be much worse. And I usually speak doom and gloom about our FOI system in BC, which is true. But in this case, I give credit where it's due to BCLC.
Well, thank you again to Stanley Tromp, investigative journalist, one of the top FOI experts in Canada. And he's the author of two stories for TheBreaker.news based on some documents he obtained from BC Lottery Corporation about their market research. And after listening to this podcast, we encourage everyone to go and read those stories to find out more about Stanley's research and about what BCLC is finding out about problems with its gambling and problem gamblers here in British Columbia. So thank you again, Stanley.
Sure, anytime. Thank you.
One more week until the legislature reopens in Victoria for the fall session. Will this week be as interesting, exciting, action-packed as last week? And joining me to discuss that is Mario Canseco, the president of Research Co. and a frequent guest on the Breaker.news podcast. First of all, we saw Monday, John Rustad, the conservative opposition leader, they announced that he had 71% of support from members of the party. But the number that really wasn't promoted as much was only fewer than 1,300 people actually voted during this summer-long review of his leadership, which meant that he only had support of about 900 people. And on the same day, he kicked out Eleanor Sturco, one of his star candidates from the 2024 election, a defector from BC United who joined the BC Conservatives. And that means the Conservatives are down to 40 seats. They came out of the election last year with 44, very close to winning. And then he had on Wednesday, the Green Party ended its leadership contest with the vote. And Emily Lowen, a 24 turned 25 year old climate campaigner with a climate charity, came out with 60% of the vote, more than 3,000 votes. So she had more than double the votes of the entire BC Conservative leadership review. She's the new green kid on the block, but she's not in the legislature. Her message is very anti-billionaire and anti-oil. There's two Greens in the legislature who are much older than her, baby boomers who may not be around for many more elections. but she's not in the legislature and doesn't seem to be any path for her to get into the legislature anytime soon. So a question, if we're looking at John Rastahad and Emily Lowen being in the news cycle at the first half of the week, is will we ever see both John Rastahad as leader of the Conservatives and Emily Lowen as leader of the Greens sitting in the legislature at the same time?
I'd say the chances for that happening are fairly slim at this point. For the Greens, you need to trigger a by-election. I don't see a situation where either of the two elected MLAs decide that they want to step aside to allow for Ms. Lowen to be in the House. It's a tough undertaking. There's no security about somebody else leaving that would trigger a by-election where she could participate. So in a way, she's going to be the one criticizing what the government and the official opposition do from outside the House. So, and of course, we have the situation with John Rostad. There's a lot of questions about his leadership. I think there's been a difficulty from the start of his leadership tenure with the BC Conservatives to connect with the business community in Metro Vancouver. I think it's something that has been missing. And it's part of why we're having all of these discussions about people who might be joining in or trying to figure out if they want to run for the leadership, even when he steps aside. I think part of the problem is there was no concerted effort on the part of the BC Conservatives to make the tent bigger, to essentially emerge from the election of 2024 with a concerted effort to bring people into the party, to register more members. This is why we had the leadership race with that low number of actual participants. And it's a party that is still trying to find its footing. You know, some days it seems to be commanded by hired guns living off the borrowed glories of their past campaigns with the BC Liberals. And sometimes it seems like it's being run by kids who really like memes. There's no cohesion to the message. And I think that is the reason why people aren't seeing John Rostad as a premier in waiting.
And on Friday, Premier David Eby reemerged. He had gone to NYC, but was back in BC for the UBCM. He had an upbeat speech to local governments, to mayors and councilors from around the province, but he's still on the anti-Trump bandwagon, the theme of making British Columbia Canada's economic engine. Mario, do you think that that message is resonating at all, or is the deficit, the record deficit of $11.6 billion and the lack of action on economic development, public safety, and health, the major issues unsolved since last year's election, do you think those issues are going to catch up to Eby and bite him?
Well, what we've seen over the past few months is people are certainly tuning out of the Trump situation. We saw how high it became in the minds of Canadians during the federal election campaign. It still continued for most of the summer. The last time we asked Canadians about the number one issue facing the country, Trump and Canada-US relations fell to third place. I think there's larger concerns, particularly here in BC, about housing and the economy. And it's definitely something where the NDP needs to connect with younger voters. They're right now looking at the BC Conservatives as an option. Those age 35 to 54 are sort of on the fence. You know, you have essentially a 50-50 split when it comes to Generation X voting for either the NDP or the Conservatives. And they're still holding on to the 55 and overs, but there's a very complex issue there, because this is the group that is more likely to have lived through the governments of the past here in British Columbia, more likely to be dissatisfied with the notion of a deficit. I think we grew into a situation where the deficit is no longer something that is absolutely terrible after the COVID-19 pandemic. But that's still, you know, years behind us. And there's a moment in which that 55 and over voter who was crucial to the victory of the NDP, because they weren't happy with the way John Rostad was going to run British Columbia, that group might be looking at the NDP's expenditures and having second thoughts. They won the election based on the support of the 55 and overs. Oddly enough, a group that used to vote BC Liberal very heavily in every election prior to the 2020 pandemic election. But holding on to that group is going to take a lot of effort. You can win an election by saying we're not John Rostad. I don't think you can win two with the same message.
BC General Employees Union has been out on picket lines throughout the month of September. Now, We're on the cusp of October, and it looks like talks will start again. After BCGEU decided late in September to go after the revenue generator for government, that being the liquor distribution branch and cannabis distribution, the BCGEU set up picket lines around liquor warehouses and then decided to set picket lines up around stores. And that caught the attention of the EB government, enough of the attention that they've agreed to restart talks. But the big question here is, can they bridge the gap? Can they reach a deal? Can they go along the path to reach a deal? Is there a path to reach a deal? Or will the BCGEU walk away from the table, or the government walk away from the table? Will the BCGEU declare a full-scale province-wide strike in the days and weeks to come?
I think it's in the government's best interest to try to solve this before Thanksgiving. If you wind up in a situation where British Columbians are heading to the liquor store to be ready for the holiday and you have picket lines, it's going to be very, very bad for them. There's going to be lots of graphics and visuals that are not going to be appealing to the base of the NDP support. That being said, I think the fundamentals are not as good for the BCGEU as they were in years past. When they had their negotiation previously during the COVID-19 pandemic, there was a groundswell of public support because people were already doing a little bit better and expected things to be the same for the employees. It's a different scenario now because the inflationary concerns haven't abated. We know that British Columbians are upset with how expensive things are, and they're expecting to pay more money for groceries, for gas, for real estate. So it's a different situation when it comes to trying to garner public support when everybody's struggling. I think what really was key to the success of their previous negotiation was that British Columbians were mostly happy with the way the COVID-19 pandemic was being managed, and many of them also receiving something from the federal government or the BC government for their trouble. It's a lot easier to appeal to that group and say, okay, you get yours too, because we already got ours. This is a very different situation because of everything that's happened, not only from the budget that was put forth by the NDP, but also because people are struggling in a very different way than they were back in 2020, 2021.
Well, thank you again for joining us on the podcast, Mario Canseco, the president of Research Co. And I look forward to having you back on the podcast, along with Andy Yan for the MMA panel in the coming weeks.
Of course. Thank you.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In FocusTaiwan.tw, U.S. bars Taiwan-made giant bicycles over forced labor concerns. Customs and Border Protection issued a withhold release order to detain shipments from the world's largest bicycle manufacturer. The order does not appear to apply to giant bicycles made outside of Taiwan. The company also has manufacturing facilities in China, Vietnam, Hungary, and the Netherlands. Giant noted that it had implemented a zero recruitment fee policy in January of this year, under which it paid the recruitment, brokerage, and government-related fees for all newly hired foreign workers. It also completed renovations of its workers' dormitories in late 2024 and introduced a system to ensure its operations meet international labor standards. In Kyoto news, Tokyo Game Show opens with record exhibitors, indie developers in spotlight. A record 1,100 exhibitors from Japan and abroad, including independent developers, producing innovative titles with relatively small budgets. Around 250,000 visitors are expected at the four-day annual extravaganza held in Chiba, near Tokyo. The Japanese gaming industry is worth more than 289 billion Canadian dollars. In Anchorage Daily News, Alaska congressional delegation moves to terminate Biden-era management plan for National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska. The 2022 Integrated Activity Plan for the area, finalized under President Joe Biden, stripped millions of acres from potential drilling that had been allowed under a Trump-era plan. The Indiana-sized reserve on Alaska's North Slope has seen increased interest from oil companies in recent years after ConocoPhillips made its large Willow discovery there. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Breaker.news. News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Oregonian, Portland Mayor Keith Wilson plans to start citing homeless campers. Police will begin issuing citations again November 1st to those not in compliance with the city's time, place, and manner rules, according to a video recording of the remarks obtained by the Oregonian. City first responders and teams of social service workers will spend the next several weeks doing outreach about the camping ban. The law prohibits people who have been offered reasonable shelter from camping on public property or rights of way. In Crosscut, the curse of the middle guy, Ferguson's first 8 months as Washington governor. Expectations were high for Bob Ferguson. For many across the political spectrum, the reality has been baffling and disappointing. What happened? Ferguson was too moderate for some Washingtonians and too progressive for others. A recent Cascade PBS Elway poll found Ferguson, Washington's 24th governor, had the worst first approval rating of any Washington governor in more than 30 years. Only 32% of Washington voters rated Ferguson's first 6 months as excellent or good, though they cited a variety of reasons for their low marks. And check out thebreaker.news and bobmackin.substack.com for the stories behind these headlines. Vancouver pro-Hamas activist refused entry to Greece under European travel ban. And BC Ferries calls House of Commons demand for China ferry deal documents unconstitutional. Read the stories behind the headlines. Go to thebreaker.news and bobmackin.substack.com. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate.
Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to Childhood Cancer Family Support Society and the Island Kids Cancer Association for what they do every day to help kids with cancer and their families get through a difficult time. September is Childhood Cancer Awareness Month in British Columbia. And you can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar? Send me an email to bob at thebreaker.news. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of September 28th, 2025. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 28th of September in 2000, Pierre Elliott Trudeau, Canada's 15th Prime Minister, died? He was 81. Love him or hate him, Trudeau the First is arguably the most consequential Canadian politician since Sir John A. Macdonald. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob at thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. And introducing bobmackin.substack.com. Sign up for the free email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. Or follow The Breaker News for news as it happens on X, formerly Twitter. And you can support The Breaker for as little as $7 a month. For more information, go to bobmackin.substack.com. Until next week.